The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the football show sponsored by AIB. Lads, what an absolute classic that was. Like, I was whinging before the game about the cold and the wet, and that bloody press box in Croke Park is very cold. I was saying if it wasn't working, I'd go home and watch it at home because it was that, like, freezing already. But that was just brilliant, lads. It was brilliant. And, like, I see some people going on about, oh, the standard wasn't great. The standard of that game was unbelievably high, considering the conditions, considering the intensity, and considering what was at stake in an Ireland semi-final. What a bloody game. That was the game of the year by a mile. These two teams bring out the best in each other. It's very obvious about that.
Yeah, it was a cracker. Absolutely brilliant game, and one we were kind of all hoping for.
I didn't think we'd get it in the when I saw the conditions. I was like, "Ah, this could be a bit of a Dublin Kerry."
And yeah, there's always a fear that you won't get enough scores in a game like that. But I suppose the conditions played their part in contributing to Mayo getting the early goal, possibly. And you know, sometimes on a day like that where the ball is like a bar of soap, and Croke Park is a very very slippy field on a wet day, so. Sometimes you can see some unforced errors that you would rarely see at that level of football. But the unpredictability of that can lend itself to the spectacle and the excitement, because really anything can happen. Like a ball lamped into the square, which on another day might look like nothing, it just takes a flick and it could end up in the net. So, and I suppose the nature of it with these two teams playing against each other, with how close their games have been, and just the to and fro nature of the game, with, you know, Mayo starting really well and going well ahead and looking like they're going to dominate, and then Kerry come back and go ahead, and then Mayo go back and go ahead, and like it was just end to end stuff, and it was absolutely brilliant, and thankfully we got it because we've been waiting for it.
We needed it, and like, I mean, when these two big teams, and like, aren't Mayo unreal?
That's been a good championship, in fairness. Like, I thought,
well, let's not get into today's not the day.
No, but
for
it
that
has been great. Like, it isn't all example. What is the standard that people are? Like, what's this unclear standard relative to what? Like,
all four standard provincial finals were hammerings. All four quarterfinals were hammerings. I don't want to talk, Conan, let's not talk about that. We did need it. We needed a classic like that between two really big teams. There's no doubt, and they gave it to us. There's no doubt about that.
And that's why it was worth having those teams meet in the semi-finals. Well, yeah, the quarters were shit, but now we have the best teams going at it when it really matters. It was definitely worth the wait.
Yeah, it was worth the wait yesterday. We even had renowned hurling snobs like Anthony Daly. Gotta love the big ball played like this, he's tweeting out after the game. And Dahi Regan.
He's only trolling there.
Dahi Regan, another hurling snob. Very, very enjoyable. Well done, both sides. Enthralling. Now, I have a lot of time for hurling snobs. I present the hurling podcast. But when the hurling snobs were getting on board saying that was brilliant, none of them said best game in the world, though, you can be sure to be seen.
Hashtag like, best game in the world. They sure didn't have it. Though.
When it's played like this, it's the best game in the world. No, and then you actually, I was pointing out usually on the hurling show a couple of weeks ago, usually after a brilliant hurling game, you get another tweet a little bit later saying, and these lads are amateurs, and then you have Premier League players diving and jumping around.
Flick over to Sky Sports there and see what you're after.
But Mayo lads, right, because Malachy Clerkin did tweeted out this, that 9 of Mayo's last 14 games have either ended level or with 1 point between the sides, and these are against the biggest teams in the country. And thank God for Mayo. Mayo almost single-handedly bring us the best games in the championship for as long as you can remember. So their breakdown was 5 draws, 2 1 point wins, 2 1 point defeats, 1 7 point defeat, that was to Dublin in a replay, and 4 wins by 5 points or more. I mean it's just sensational how, no matter who they're playing, it's almost like they adjust to the level of the game that they're in. You know, like they could be playing anyone and this is going to be an exciting game, whatever way it is psychologically with them.
Yeah, well, we might get into their choice of selection of players and positions, and maybe that has something to do with it, is constantly adjusting for the opposition rather than, I suppose, putting faith in themselves and backing themselves to win. But I suppose they've been burnt enough times in big games that maybe tempers that philosophy. But we'll come back to that, I'm sure.
Well, no, we won't come back. We'll come back to it right now because we have to talk about the elephant in the room here, Aidan O'Shea, and his positions, because this is just, like, bizarre. And do you know what? I'm going to read out an Eamon Fitzmaurice quote, and that's going to tell you all you need to know about Aidan O'Shea. he did fine. Hamid Fitzmaurice says, hoping to God that the same thing happens again next week. He did fine. He won one or two balls in the first half and he rooted away for a few more balls with Kieran. It didn't have a major impact on the game. Now, I know Eamon Fitzmaurice is trying to talk up Aidan O'Shea's performance against Kieran Donaghy there, because, like, I mean, it did have a major bearing on the game. And here's something that you'd like to point out about this. Aidan O'Shea was directly at fault for the first goal. Now, this all has to be said in the context that Aidan O'Shea is not to blame for any of this. Aidan O'Shea is a midfielder with no fullback experience other than a minute or two marking Kevin Feely towards the end of a game when Kildare were desperate, and a bit on Michael Murphy. So 100% Aidan O'Shea is not a fault for this. He's been put into a specialist position with very little practice on arguably the best target man, who can not only win high ball, can also win low ball as well. So, like, I mean, Aidan did not do well. He was at fault for the Stephen O'Brien goal. 100% at fault. And what question I want to ask you, Keane, is why is there more stock put into winning a high... If Donaghy catches a high ball and lays it off and scores a goal, or catches a high ball and scores the goal himself, it's still 3 points. Aidan O'Shea was at fault for Donaghy running through and slipping it to... this was from a hand pass, slipping it to Stephen O'Brien, a goal. But the same stock isn't put into that at all. So, like, I mean, Donaghy on the ground is just as dangerous as in the air, but people are so fearful of this high ball when, like, Donaghy gets way more balls out in front.
Yeah, well, the other thing as well, that, you know, Donaghy played Jack Barry through for his goal chance in the second half as well.
Yeah, and that was very poor defending by Aidan as well, who didn't know whether to go with Donaghy or whether to cover Jack Barry. This is just inexperience.
Oh,
in
it absolutely is. I mean, look, I've had... You know, you can have situations like this before where even in training, somebody, a midfielder, might end up back in the full back line or something. And they're used to playing in a certain manner. And it's not to be as tight as a defender would ordinarily be. So there's a tendency to stand off and stay goal side. But standing off and staying goal side is absolutely no use to you when the man on the ball can pick out a killer pass or kick the ball over the bar. Now, look, Donaghy missed a good few, missed a few opportunities that, you know, the like of a Gainey or Donoghue would have gotten, but his overall contribution to the Kerry attack was huge. I mean, it was the only thing really that kept Kerry in the game, I would have thought, because at times when they needed somebody to win ball or do something, he was the obvious outlet, and he was the only one on the day who, well, look, in fairness, to Kerry, the full back line were a bit of sixes and sevens at times, but he was miles out in front of Aidan O'Shea.
Miles out in front, and when you compare
under no pressure taking the ball on a wet day,
no.
Under no pressure delivering the ball on a wet day, under no pressure shooting on a wet day. Like, this is an All-Ireland semi-final here. Like, and if this was a challenge match and the lad was getting that much space, the lad who was marking him would have been hauled off. Now, it was just absolutely ludicrous to see it at this standard. Like, it's absolutely bonkers to play a fella who's a midfielder or centre half forward. There is two best positions. Probably centre half forward at intercounty level is his best position. So why in the name of God would you play him full back?
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
And on the basis that he's a big lad and he can wrestle with, again, you're doing a huge disservice to Donaghy, who's just a sensation all round. He's an all round brilliant player. So matching him physically is only a small part of the whole thing, as far as I'm concerned.
But it also messes up your whole system as well, because you have players who are possibly worried about that. Aidan O'Shea is dropping off Donaghy, right? Which means Donaghy all of a sudden has the overlap. I mean, the Stephen O'Brien goal is just a perfect example. Aidan O'Shea did absolutely everything wrong, right? When he wasn't tight to him initially, right, he backed off. But then he didn't back off far enough. He backed off and left 30 yards of space in behind him for a hand pass.
Yeah.
He was the last defender, he was 2-on-1. He had to keep going all the way, backpedaling,
keep backing in
until the 14, and then Donaghy either has to shoot or the space is tightened up. Like, so fundamentally on every level his defensive instincts are wrong, but he's not a defender.
No.
So it's absolutely stupid.
That's the thing, and, like, I mean, you learn how to pick up these things over years and years. You don't learn this in a week. Like, I mean, he had three training sessions to, you know, to get his head around this. And, like, I mean, it just looks so unfair. It just looks so unfair to him. And the knock-on effect of it, Colin, was that they had to move a back out of the defence. And who was that back? Only Lee Keegan, because he can be versatile.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, like, it had the knock-on effect of moving him out of his best position. And I actually think Aidan O'Shea, imagine the damage he could have done against the Kerry full back line that had no sweeper. You know, like, I'm not saying Kerry should have played a sweeper, but when Aidan O'Shea plays full forward against Dublin, then they have to drop a man back on Keane O'Sullivan or somebody. So like,
can't leave him unmarked.
And Kerry would have left him unmarked yesterday. Yeah. So they could have, he could have run amok in that full forward line.
And you talk about robbing Peter to pay Paul, but they didn't even pay Paul, like, because Aidan O'Shea was no use back there anyway. So they took Aidan O'Shea away from where he's been their best player this season and put him in fullback, where a bad fullback could have done exactly the same what he was doing yesterday. And the argument is that, oh well, maybe they didn't play a high ball in because O'Shea was there, but why does that matter? Don't he got the ball anyway? It doesn't matter how he got it. And
see, that's it. The stock, that's what I'm talking about. There's so much stock is going into the high ball, whereas, you know.
Well, I suppose, look, to play devil's advocate, and, you know, you have to try and think, right, why did Mayo do this? They've put Aidan O'Shea back in there because they're worried about Donaghy winning the ball right in the danger zone and being a complete goal threat. The chances that Donaghy did lay on, for example, to Stephen O'Brien, that's an untracked runner right down the centre of their defence. Like, the management can't legislate for a lad getting away like that. So they're kind of saying, OK, Aidan will compete for the ball aerially better than anybody else we have because we have nobody else that can compete with him, with Donaghy, right? So they're hoping then that their defenders will pick up breaks. They're kind of saying, OK, if Donaghy is winning the ball out on the wing, he's not a threat. We're still set. We're all goal side. We should be good enough to hold them out. Now, that's, again, playing devil's advocate, you have to say, which is a bigger risk-reward for them? They know they're giving up something by, I suppose, playing Aidan O'Shea full-back. But I suppose they've done the SWOT analysis or something. They're saying, this is what we think is going to work out best for our team on the day. Now, when I originally saw him in there, I thought, OK, this is interesting. Aidan O'Shea is going to now go on the attack. Aidan O'Shea is actually, every time Mayo got the ball, is going to run up into the forwards, drag Donaghy with him and take Donaghy completely out of the game. And Donaghy has a choice then. Do I follow Aidan O'Shea or do I leave him free and hatch up here? That's what I thought was going to happen. But Aidan O'Shea was very conservative. He never really broke forward. He never looked to really get on the ball. In Aidan O'Shea's scenario, I thought he would have been better off trying actually to pull Donaghy all the way up and make Donaghy play fullback.
I actually suggested that last Thursday night to maybe put Keith Higgins on Donaghy and just tell him to attack all the time and really throw Kerry off, you know, that way. But, like, I mean, I do agree with you. Maybe Aidan O'Shea could have thrown him off. But one thing that was interesting was Donaghy bringing Aidan O'Shea to the wings. Now, I thought Kerry at half-time criminally underused Donaghy in the second half, considering that it was so blatantly obvious to everyone that Donaghy was getting oceans of room out in front of Aidan O'Shea, that surely to God the whole message at half time was, lads, Aidan's 20 yards Kieran Donaghy's in 20 yards of space, let's get him on the ball as much as possible. He's not being tightly marked. You see Donaghy a lot and you're dragging Aidan O'Shea to the wings. Now, that's all right in theory, but in my opinion, James O'Donoghue and Geaney should have been bringing their men to the wings and leave Donaghy in one-on-one with O'Shea, because O'Shea was at sea. The two Mayo cornerbacks were doing brilliantly on Geaney and James O'Donoghue. Really, really top performances, and we'll get into some of that after a while. But, like, there was huge tactical mistakes on both sides. Now, we'll get into some of the Kerry moves in part two, which I thought Eamon Fitzmaurice was really, really good at. But I just want to finish on this, lads, and Rochford's getting slated. I thought there was a headline on The Independent saying Lions managed by donkeys or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Which is completely unfair and uncalled for.
That's very over the top now.
Over the top. And Rochford's getting slated. Now, you have to remember, last year on the podcast, we lauded Rochford. He brought Alan Dillon in out of nowhere to mark Justin McMahon against Tyrone. Alan Dillon ran amok in the first half because Justin McMahon drops off centre forward and covers full back line. So Alan Dillon was the perfect man to use, you know, in that scenario. You know, so, like, I mean, then Lee Keegan marking Enda Smith. Nobody was predicting that before the game. Midfield scores 1-3. Where has he been lauded for this? He gets slated for. While I completely strongly disagree with Aidan O'Shea playing full back, I applaud Rochford's bravery in big games. And you have to remember this as well. He's slated for Henley replacing Clark, and all the brave fellas are saying that's a mistake. If you were to before that game, I would have said I agreed with that move, because Clark's kickouts towards the end of the first match were a disaster. Henley is a short kick-out master, and that tactically, that made sense. Now, Henley had a meltdown on the day. That's not necessarily Rochford's fault, and he corrected the mistake, but it was too late. He took him off. But, like, tactically, that wasn't the worst call in the world. Now, he's been slated for it because it didn't work out right, but like, he's brave to make these decisions. And I don't think there's enough managers to go, I don't know how Mayo will line out the next day, because I don't care. Eamon Fitzmaurice doesn't know. There's that kind of, you know, flexibility around Mayo now that there wasn't before. And Rochford is brave and puts his neck on the line and his reputation on the line, and lads hop off him. Absolutely hop off him. Like, I mean, you know, I think it's completely unfair that his brilliant tactical moves are brushed and his poor tactic. He's making tactical moves all the time.
Yeah, well, like, yeah, I would agree with a lot of that, because going back to the famous one is the All-Ireland final last year, and obviously after the game when Henley makes the bizarre mistakes that he makes. I mean, how can the manager legislate in the build-up for the week of a game that your goalkeeper is going to drop a ball that's landed on his chest and give away a penalty?
Exactly.
Like, come on.
That's true.
Like, it's absolutely nuts. Whereas if you look at the kickouts, and possibly Henley, I think, was at fault maybe for one kickout in the replayed All-Ireland final, but in the drawn game, Clark's kickouts were a massive concern, and Clark's kickouts were a bit of a concern, I would say, yesterday against Kerry.
And another thing, just before we continue on, Henley wasn't a junior goalkeeper brought in from the cold. He was James Horan's regular. It's not like he's no experience or anything. Like, I mean, it's like being led by donkeys, and it's that Eamon Sweeney, and the less I say about him the better. Like, I mean, this is the kind of level that you're talking about. Like, this is an inter-county manager that's beaten by in an All-Ireland final replay by the best Dublin team in history, and now is back again looking for more, putting it up to Kerry, by far the better team, has his team playing at a hugely high level, and you have a journalist wanting to call him a donkey. Like, get off the stage.
Yeah, no, totally over the top. Now, look, we're looking at the game from yesterday. The Aidan O'Shea call, in my opinion, didn't work, and I wouldn't agree with the thought process of putting him in there full back. I look at that Mayo team and I look at those players and I think that they should be backing themselves a bit more and, I suppose, going for the game a little bit more. I don't like to see the disruption in the way they play, but look at, they were still the dominant team in the game. Even with Aidan O'Shea playing full back, they played the majority of the football, they played the attractive football, they played the more cohesive football in terms of a kicking game, they created all sorts of problems against Kerry. They just missed a couple of chances when they should have been a bit more clinical early in the game. Some very, very soft freeze in the first half, I thought, allowed Kerry keep themselves in the game. Shamey O'Shea presses the self-destruct button midway through the first half to give away the ball, and that's what gets Kerry back in the game. He loses possession, which he really shouldn't have done, and that's where the goal comes from. So that's where Stephen O'Brien's goal comes from. So from a position of complete dominance in the first half, again, Mayo's, we'll call them unforced errors, because when you have possession and you have time on the ball, I'm sick saying this, but you shouldn't really end up being dispossessed.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, so I think the manager's getting a bit of a hard deal, but I suppose that's just, it's always revisionist after the fact, isn't it?
It always is. And like, I mean, talking about Stephen Rochford, I spoke to him in Croke Park yesterday, and fair play to him, he gave me 11 minutes, so hear that audio is now. Stephen, I don't know how long I have with you, so I'll get straight into the Aidan O'Shea decision to play fullback. Can you, like, I mean, I know he's drifted in there at times during games before, but to play him in such a big game for the whole game, what were the thoughts behind that?
Well, like, I suppose, you know, having not won the game, it's going to come under a lot of attention. But look, you know, I suppose we've seen Kieran Donaghy's threat since 2006 against Mayo, 2014. If you look at the two goals that Kerry have scored in the last two games, they've come directly off Kieran. He scored one, you know, played direct ball off him. Second, even, you know, their second goal themselves. So, like, we look to put in, you know, a physical presence there, and somebody who could deal with that and had some familiarity in it. We're not. We don't have a line of 6'3" fullbacks that would have had other familiarity around playing there, and you know, that we tried.
Yeah, does it have to be 6'3" fullback, or can you just have a fella that kind of spoils him and, you know, gets under his skin?
But is a guy at 5'8" or 5'10" going to spoil a guy at 6'5"?
Maybe not. You know? But Philly McMahon can do it, you know, and he wouldn't be the tallest fella.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, Rory O'Carroll had a bit to play in that as well. If you're going back to the 2015 final. And that was, again, a good big physical guy that can do that. And, you know, look, you know, obviously he's going to come under the spotlight. I have no problem with that. But I thought you know, as regards how Aidan played, and he dealt with the threat. I thought he did, you know, I thought he did quite well. And Kieran Donaghy, though, is a good footballer, so he was always going to win possessions. He was always going to try and be a link and a pivot for them. But look, I mean, it's something that we look at and see, you know, does it need improvement or does something else happen for next week?
He looked a little bit at sea to me. Like, I mean, he wasn't kind of matching Kieran's runs out beside him. He was almost like he was letting them off out in front. Was that an instruction to cover the D, or was it that Aidan just wasn't getting up right up beside him?
Well, I think, look, you know, I'll need to probably see those to get a better sort of idea on it. But I think if you go back to, you know, some of Kieran, you know, Kieran's a very smart player, so he looked to pull you out of space, maybe leave Paul Gainey in behind. So there's, you know, there's, when you're coming up against that type of guy, you've got to be conscious around what's also happening around you. And maybe that, you know, sometimes in the threat when he was pulling away from goal, you know, you're trying to measure what's that level of threat further out the field and what it would be if he was winning primary possession, you know, inside the large fairly area.
Did you do much coaching with Aidan about how to play fullback? Because it is such a specialised position, and Donaghy's such a specialised full forward, and in such a big game, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, just to say, look, you're big, you've kind of played basketball, you can wrestle, you can match him physically. Like, I mean, there's a lot more involved in playing fullback than that.
Yeah, and I think, like, in fairness to the coaching team, we would have done a lot more thought than just asking Aidan to go in on Friday evening.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did some work, but again, you know, you're limited. We had three training sessions since the Roscommon game, and to be honest, Kieran Donaghy didn't take our total focus. We had a lot of things that we did right. We scored 213 today from play. We had 15 of our 16 scores from play. You know, Lee brought us a little bit of different running power in that area of the field. So look, you know, when you draw the game or you lose a game, you know, we look at all aspects of it. But we're still in the battle.
Yeah, you kicked all, just from my analysis from watching it, he kicked all the good football in the game. You know what I mean? So, like, I mean, to be a little bit frustrating when you get a run on them to get the goal to get back in. I don't think Kerry deserved to be in touch with you at all with the way you were tearing them apart up front.
Well, yeah, but we didn't execute particularly well. We put the ball in the goalie's hands three times. We missed a, you know, really good goal opportunity. Could have got a penalty in that. And again, in the second half, we took a couple of, you know, really wrong decisions in relation to our execution and shot selection. And at the same time, we learned from that a little bit within the game, and we got a fresh player in Paddy Durkin onto the ball to get the equaliser. But again, we had a, you know, one on the 14-yard line blocked down, you know, in the closing stages. So,
yeah,
so
I think Killian probably shouldn't have laid that off to, was it?
Stephen Cohen.
But
it was a good line, you know, it was a good run.
It was,
And probably Kerry, I think, did well to sort of stand him up and sort of maybe put a little bit of indecision in him. But, you know, it would have been good to have somebody coming again, looping off them. And they're the little things that you look to see, can you improve on for the next year.
That was a lovely little move, actually. Just you mentioned Paddy Durkin, and I can 100% see why Paddy Durkin would be coming on. He quicked the equalising score. He missed one or two chances, but he's usually really accurate. But bringing him on for Colin Boyle, like, is it always predetermined that Colin Boyle's coming off after a certain amount of time? Because sometimes it looks like he's playing really well and he's called the show.
And he is playing well.
Yeah.
You know, and if he wasn't playing well, he mightn't have he mightn't be there, you know, to 45 minutes in the game or whatever. But that game was attritional, you know, and you're marking someone like Stephen O'Brien, you know, real powerhouse, you know, running, you know, really running hard. Cullum got up and down the field. Like, I mean, if you look at him, he contributed to one or two scores, had one or two shots. So, you know, he's covering that ground hard, and the way he plays the game, he drives into every tackle. And at the same time, you know, we took an assessment that the likes of Paddy, you know, we needed to get him into the game, you know, and, you know, it fell today that Cullum came off. You know, people say that, geez, you know, you have a predetermined when Andy comes off. Andy played the whole game today.
You were no way you were taking him off today,
like,
anyway.
But, like, you know,
he was unreal.
The thing here is, you know, we've got, it was a really hard call and leaving Paddy out in the first place. So, like, you know, are you going to change your full back line? They were doing quite well. You know, we needed to get a little bit more mobility into the middle of the field. We just, you know, conceded the goal.
Yeah.
So, like, you know,
I'm trying to think who you would take off. I was trying to think who you would take off for Paddy if it wasn't Colin Boyle. And, like, you look around at the other fellas, you know, your two cornerbacks were outstanding the whole way through it. So, like, I mean, when you break down who could have gone off, there's not too many, you know, they were all doing well.
Yeah, and so was Cullum, but, you know, he's no longer 24 years of age. And again, his way that he plays the game, he plays it very attritional. And,
yeah.
You know, and we love him for that. He does a super, super job in that. And look, you know, God knows what the next day will bring.
You're not afraid to make big decisions in big games. I'll give you that. Because, like, Aidan, obviously, arguably your best player all year, was moved, you know, into a position he wouldn't be used to. Lee Keegan, your best player in general, in my opinion, was playing in a position he hadn't really been playing too much of, and ended up getting man-marked by Paul Murphy. And I don't think he got into the game to the same extent as he usually would, but it was almost like he gave Lee Keegan to them, whereas if Fitzmaurice would have had to move Murphy around and switch his team around to get him on Keegan, had you not put Keegan in the forwards.
Yeah, and look, I suppose, you know, we tried to play Lee probably out as a third midfielder and a little bit more, and, you know, in that I think maybe Jason Doherty actually did quite well, because there was more space there on the top of the D, and, you know, the centre back wasn't in a position to maybe close off those areas. But again, yeah, Lee didn't, you know.
So you wanted Lee on Morley, that's who Lee went up on, and
no,
then Fitzmaurice switched that around.
No, we didn't have any consideration around what Kerry did, to be honest. It was around sort of like, you know, where we could play Lee a little bit more advanced, where he didn't have to be sort of taken up a guy defensively. So, look, in any of these columns...
That's what his power, that's what Lee's strength is that a forward won't mark him as tight when he goes forward as what, you know, a Paul Murphy will.
Yeah. And at the same time, when you're creating space for other forwards to make advantage of when you score 15 scores from play,
yeah,
you know, you give up something on all these things,
yeah,
to try and gain something else. So, you know, everything didn't work out today. We will go back, we'll look at it. You know, I said coming into this job, I wasn't going to die wondering, right? At any time that we've gone out to select the team, not to be conservative, as people may think that we are. We're going out to have a cut of teams, to go and win the games and learn from possible mistakes that we have made, and, you know, what we've seen Mayo make in the years gone by. And look, we're still here standing, you know, and we'll see what the next 6 days bring.
Alright, just finally, did you consider at any stage during the game moving Aidan into the full forward line, because they obviously didn't play a sweeper, you were getting an awful lot of joy in there that you could have given, and you were giving brilliant diagonal balls in, but maybe that cutting edge wasn't there, you were getting bottled up a bit. Did you consider during the game maybe switching that, because Kerry weren't using Donaghy in the air too much, and maybe there was an option to maybe make that switch in game?
I suppose the question is why they didn't use Donaghy there. I think, you know,
they'd no half forward line, I think, but that's why seemed to be all over
Jack
the place.
Savage got on a nice bit of ball,
that's why I think they brought him on,
and,
yeah,
and started to dictate a little bit more. I think if you go and you look at, you know, the nemesis of our concession of the second goal, it came from a turnover. We played the ball out, they noticed that Aidan was actually out in the wing, you know, trying to gain that ball, saw a mismatch, and they played off it, and they took a gamble, and they won the break, and, you know, fair play to them. You know, when you don't win the game, as I said, or, you know, your draw, we will look at every part of this and sort of say, right, what worked well for us. You know, as I already said, you have to give up something sometimes to try and get something, to try and win the game, or you think you have an advantage. Did some things win today that we sort of had tried new? Maybe some did, maybe some didn't. Did other players or our style of play benefit from it? Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But, you know, we just have to take our time and just sort of look at that in the next 24 hours and see, you know, can we make better decisions? But, you know, the manner in which we sort of conceded the two goals would be something heaved a little bit with that, you know. We were in possession of the ball both times, and we were sort of, you know, easily turned over. We gave away the possession, and, you know, we were left really to, you know, to be painful for it.
Yeah, it's a sloppy day. Just finally, I was doing a show in Westport Thursday night, and I was talking to James Horan about the logistics of this draw in All Ireland semi-final, 6 day turnaround. I'm sure players had hotel rooms potentially booked in Dublin tonight to have a few pints. Now, like, logistically, it must be a nightmare for a manager now.
Well, I suppose we have experience of it, but look, it's the same process as it is, I suppose, for Kerry.
Yeah.
You know, we have a couple of players that live and work in Dublin, so, you know, how we sort of manage their energy levels this week in relation to their travel and what they have to do. You know, we throw that all into the.
You might have to take the week off work, will you?
Well, you know, I'll probably be considering it if my boss listens
AIB
into GA.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'll put in a good
you
word.
You might put in a word. Yeah, yeah, no problem.
Stephen, thanks very much.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. And it does happen, but I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving. And I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last time.
The camera show doesn't look great. There was maybe they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering, was he at the same match as me? He was kind of making out dirty, but unlucky to lose, like. Let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
Fort Minor. Interesting something Stephen Rochford said there, lads. It just kind of got me thinking. He says, you give up something to gain something else, which I thought was a standout kind of comment, and it just shows how deeply to think about it. Now, I would disagree with Lee Keegan playing the half-hour line as well. So I'm disagreeing with his tactical stuff, but I'm also giving him credit for bloody trying something. Okay, not the Aidan O'Shea stuff. Now, Lee Keegan is his go-to man that has put out so many fires for him in the full back line, half back line. I can forgive him for the Lee Keegan thing, and that he had to put him there because Aidan O'Shea was an extra body in the backs and nobody else would do that same job. But, like, I mean, he did make a good point with Lee Keegan that because Lee Keegan was being man-marked by Paul Murphy and playing centre-forward. Let me just give you a run down on what happened there. Lee Keegan started centre back, Aidan O'Shea started in midfield, and Aidan O'Shea tracked back one ball and he stayed full back. Then Lee Keegan went up centre half forward on Tadhg Morley. Eamon Fitzmaurice was very, very fast with this change and moved Paul Murphy over onto Lee Keegan straight away. But just to get back to Rochford's point, is Rochford said that because Lee Keegan was being man marked by Paul Murphy, usually centre backs drop off and cover that D. He said because Paul Murphy was following Lee Keegan around all over the place, Jason Doherty was able to get loads of space at the top of that D, and he ran amok, and McLaughlin and Dermot O'Connor were holding the half forward line, giving in lovely diagonal balls into the full forward line. And maybe you give up something, you know, to get this. So, like, I mean, a lot of people watching don't think of stuff like that.
Well, I think it's a very, very look, he was very honest in his interview, and was well done, Willie. It was a very good interview.
But, thank you very much.
It is. No, it's very interesting to hear that sort of straight talking from a manager, because we don't usually get it. And I just want to pick up on this novel approach of actually playing six forwards up the pitch like you did. Wow, what an amazing thing, and how effective it can be for your full forward line.
And it's not even Keane. Here's the thing, they dropped a bit, like there was space in front of the Kerry full forward line, but they didn't drop so far that their men didn't follow them. So they're all like, they were always in it when they got the ball. McLaughlin and Dermot O'Connor always had that option. If they were able to throw a sidestep, that diagonal ball was on. You look at the other side of that field, that was not the same case. There was such a gap there that when David Moore and these fellas had it in midfield, they were looking up, and you've James O'Donoghue getting the ball out past the 45 because he has to break that far.
Yeah, well, I think we look, I kind of talk about it sometimes about setting the terms of engagement and playing the game on your terms. The game yesterday was played on Mayo's terms, because Mayo dictated what Kerry had to do. Keegan played up the field, Kerry chose to man mark him. That meant all six of their defenders were occupied. Then you had Donald Vaughan playing centre half back, or in the half back affair, bombing forward and dragging Johnny Buckley back into his defence all the time, which means Buckley was never an outlet for Kerry in their half forward line. So Kerry were completely disjointed because of the way that the Mayo players sort of instinctively play. Like, Colin Boyle was bombing on as well, which was brilliant to see, because that's when Mayo are kind of at their best, is really breaking from deep. But Kerry didn't have that link in the half forward line. They didn't have that option to kick. On a number of occasions in the first half, Mayo were able to get the ball kind of in their own half back line, full back line. They were able to kick a long distance, 40, 50, 60 metres up towards the likes of Kevin McLaughlin. They were providing that link.
And we've been saying this all year.
I know.
Keep your bloody half forward line there.
It's very difficult to do it, though.
Or two of them at least.
I'm sure Kerry wanted to do that.
Yeah.
On occasions, that requires your midfielders to be very disciplined and maybe stand off their men a little bit to create that bit of defensive structure. Even though a team kind of sometimes likes to come out to mat, but Kerry didn't have that link, so they needed somebody to stay up in that half hour. And Johnny Buckley was dragged, he kind of had to go at Vaughan because let's face it, I don't think Maher or Moran would have had the legs to track Vaughan consistently. Unfortunately, I don't know whether Mikey Gainey picked up an injury or not.
No, he didn't, and I'll explain exactly what happened with him.
Savage did a lot better in that regard when he came
on. But it goes exactly, and this is Eamon Fitzmaurice. So number one, he made a great move in putting Paul Murphy and Lee Keegan. I think it's a fairly obvious thing, but a lot of managers might take ages to do that. He did it after like maybe 30 seconds.
Doesn't mess around.
Yeah. But he didn't mess around Michael Gainey either, because I take your point that both Boyle and Vaughan were going forward and dragging the lads out of the way. But Mikey Gainey was going back back on his own accord. Keith Higgins was marking him, and Keith Higgins didn't follow him. He went back and kind of stood a little bit in front of the full forward line. So Fitzmaurice didn't want this at all. So he pulled Geeney off the shore and brought on Jack Savage for two reasons. Number one, to hold the half forward line because they had no one holding it. And number two, to occupy Keith Higgins and not have him covering the full forward line. That was a brilliant move by Fitzmaurice. Mikey Geeney was absolutely not injured. It was a tactical move that Fitzmaurice, like, you could see it a mile away, but he's down on pitch side. And, like, I mean, there's whole, I'd say for a lot of managers, they're like, will I do it? Will I not do it? You know, yeah, Fitzmaurice doesn't ask those questions. Fitzmaurice does it.
Like, Rochford, they're saying you give up something to gain something else, but he has to give up Lee Keegan. Like, I would rather have Lee Keegan playing his best football than have Killian O'Connor, you know, a little bit more free than he might be. Like, would you not rather just get the best out of Lee Keegan?
Well, yeah, no, it's true.
I think that what he was talking about was playing Keegan actually up in the half forward line. I think maybe he's saying that they were giving up something by the fact that he was man marked, but he probably hadn't predicted that before. Maybe he did.
You can't compare to Killian O'Connor, though, Conan, right? Because he had to move a defender up because Aidan O'Shea came back. So if it was Vaughan moved up, for example, he wouldn't have been man marked. He would, you know what I mean? You would have had the centre back dropping off him, letting him into midfield, and covering Doherty and the two lads inside. So, you know what I mean? You can't compare to Killian O'Connor. You have to just compare Lee Keegan doing that job to Boyle, Vaughan, or some other defender, because it had to be a defender to be pushed up there.
It's possibly interesting that it maybe wasn't Keith Higgins, who has played up there before, and who, in fairness to him, is very, very difficult to stop. You know, when he gets the ball, his first few yards are incredibly explosive, and you could see it at occasions in the game where he'd just step away from Kerry, you know, forwards trying to tackle him. I think that might be a move because, again, would they man mark Keith Higgins in the same fashion? Now, you know, maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't, but if they put Murphy onto Keegan, I think Mayo get the better of that because they have if Murphy picks up Higgins, then Lee Keegan is free. So I think that works out better for Mayo.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, like, I mean, obviously Keegan was earmarked to go up in Morley, but I'm sure Mayo must have thought, because Murphy's the perfect man for Keegan. Like, Murphy's fast, he's sticky, he's brilliant engine. He did a Lee Keegan on Lee Keegan. Do you know what I mean? In the forwards, Keegan got a taste of his own medicine. He even he got a yellow card for checking him off the run. Like, you watch him, he marked him really tight. And, like, I can't stress enough, like, there's so many similarities in the modern game between wing back and wing forward. And I move from wing back to wing forward, and I know exactly how long it takes you to adjust to that position. You're not man marked from wing back. You're really not. You're marking a fella who doesn't have really the defensive instincts, like we're talking about Aidan O'Shea not having him. So you have a fella who'll tune out, who might get dragged into the play, who'll let you off. You know what I mean? You can take a risk marking a forward and hope your midfielders flick it on and you're gone. The forward won't man mark you. The defender, when you're playing wing forward, you have to completely change your game, because I'm out around midfield and I'm being man-marked. I'm like, shit, what am I going to do? So what I used to do is just hold the half forward line and have left and right to break, because I didn't like falling into that middle third and being man-marked. It was horrible. I just didn't like it. You know what I mean? You don't want that. So Lee Keegan had to contend with being man-marked, something he's not used to for a whole game, play with his back to goals a little bit more than he's used to, and not be able to get ahead of steam coming behind the play. He was in front of it. I don't know. I wouldn't have agreed with that, although, like, I'm not going to criticise Rochford heavily for that, like I would for the Aidan O'Shea one. But, like, I mean, it was clearly obvious that Lee Keegan didn't have the influence on the game that he usually would.
If they were related, though, then it's a double whammy, isn't it? Like, if they had Keegan there for O'Shea back, it's like, oh my god, it's bad on two counts then. Like, you could have got more out of Lee Keegan in defence, or coming from defence, and more out of Aidan O'Shea in his normal position.
Yes, look, it's just some people are more comfortable playing back to goal, and some people need to face the play and build up ahead of steam. But one of the other things was when Mark Griffin went off for Kerry at half time. I mean, immediately for me, I would have been thinking, right, let's throw Aidan O'Shea up here for 10 minutes and let's see what happens. Because that was any sort of physicality and size that Kerry did have in their full back then was kind of lost with Griffin going off. And I know Morley tightened up very well on Doherty when he went on to him after Griffin.
That was another great move by Fitzmaurice. He brought Lynn into the half forward line, took off Griffin, put Morley back. But you're right. And even with Donoghue went off, Keane, Aidan O'Shea stayed full back on Brian Sheehan, which, like, Jesus Christ, like, I mean, give him up, put him up for the 5 minutes there at least, where if you want to be so, you know, strict about him marking Donoghue, when Donoghue goes off, have a contingency, or if he goes off injured, was Aidan O'Shea just going to stay full back the whole game?
Well, listen, we know that all these managers listen to the podcast, so I'm sure all of these tactical moves will be made for the next day.
But it is so interesting, lads, there's no doubt about that. And, like, I mean, the two Mayo cornerbacks were outstanding, there's no question about that. Like, Harrison and Bennett, and Barrett. And Barrett's not a half back. This idea of playing, he's a cornerback. He's a sticky man marker. And Harrison was brilliant, tailor made for Geaney. Really. Now it was a day for backs, and the fact Kerry had no half forward line meant they were racing them out, kind of in straight lines, trying to get out in front of them. And it suited the Mayo defence, where I think Kerry will rectify that half forward line problem the next day. And the Kerry full forward line will be able to make left and right runs rather than these straight out runs.
That's a good point, and it's probably somewhere where Rochford does deserve credit. He has serious balls. We're talking about semi-final.
He has balls. There's no doubt about
but
that.
I always would have thought McDurkin coming on was obviously great for him, but I just thought, just play Durkin, like, and play him instead of Barrett. But then you saw what Barrett did with O'Donoghue, and it's like, well, in hindsight, he's right.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, because you'd like to see Durkin in the team. Yeah. I think he's an excellent player, but you know, it's such a tough one to call, because they have, you know, Kerry are so dangerous up front. But it's amazing, we're talking about all the different things that went right for Mayo. Practically all their stuff went right. They cut Kerry apart up front, and there's not a lot you can say about Kerry being particularly good, bar some good tactical moves from their manager.
Yeah,
and they drew the game. So I mean, like, it's just, it's incredible that Mayo are again in this scenario where, you know, after the game you're thinking, how in the name of God did they not manage to win that game? And it's the sort of, I suppose, I know it's scoreboard journalism to a certain extent, but it's the one kind of difficult move of playing one of your marquee men maybe out of position, or making that big, you know, sort of unpredictable switch. It was the goalkeeper that time, and it worked. It didn't work in favour because of his mistakes. And Aidan O'Shea's role at full back, you know, you could say Donaghy got the freedom to be involved in, what, maybe 2.5, 2.6 of Kerry's 2.40, like, directly involved.
Yeah, directly, and in the, like, they weren't direct, the 2.6, I saw that stat, but I don't, like, directly, what's directly?
Well,
you know?
2.3 was directly.
Well, I think if you look at the goals, he directly was the assist hand pass for the Stephen O'Brien goal.
Yeah, that's directly, I'll give him that.
The second goal, there was a ball played into him, which, I suppose, look, it wouldn't have been played in if Donaghy wasn't in there. The breaking ball came to Moran, who stepped inside, and, you know, the rebound was put in by Buckley. He kicked the point himself. He laid off a couple of hand passes. He was, I suppose, involved. He was handling a lot of ball, whereby they were getting themselves up the field, much like Andy Moran regularly does. So, yeah, I know what you're saying, directly involved, but he was involved in the moves where they either won a free at the end of it or got a score out of it. So, you know, he had his fingerprints on a lot, really, is what I'm trying to say. And, you know, in the overall scheme of things, it's hard to see how much more dominant to Mayo have to beat Kerry.
Yeah, that's the thing. And they were dominant. There was only one team. Again, they dominated Kerry kickouts. They didn't do as good off their own kickouts, but they dominated, I thought, Kerry's kickouts. They left the three men inside, Moran, Killian O'Connor. Killian O'Connor was very good. Andy Moran, like, was sensational. We'll talk about some of the individual performances in performance of the weekend. Doherty was excellent, and we flagged him up last Thursday as well. Like, he's lively.
He was fantastic. Yeah. He played that link role
perfect.
Absolutely brilliantly. Yeah. And that's a very, very hard role to play.
It's selfless, yeah.
Because you're sort of, you're in that middle third where it's very difficult to get the starting point of your run right, where you're the option for the kicker. It's oftentimes you can be too close to the man on the ball and it's going over your head, and then you're too far away to support the full forward line. But he was picking up really good positions and making strong, hard runs. And in fairness to him, he kind of tired near the end of the game. Morley got a bit of a grip on him, but his contribution was huge. And Kevin McLaughlin again was, I thought he was really,
he was
really
brilliant.
Good.
Yeah. He was really, really good.
His deliveries are fantastic.
But this is the thing now, right? These diagonal balls. Now, I saw some criticism. I heard Joe Brawley was talking about Kerry playing a sweeper. And, like, I mean, this lad, I have great time for Joe, but as a pundit, he just drives me demented. Like, if both those teams played sweepers and the game became tactical, he'd say this is a terrible. Like, I mean, where is he coming out of? Then I think I saw a headline. I was looking for the highlights on the Sunday game on The Player this morning. I saw Desi Dolan had been saying the same thing. But this is the thing, right? Like it was obvious Kerry might have benefited from a sweeper. Like, that's very obvious. Those diagonal balls are really hard to defend. The best defenders in the game won't be able to handle Killian O'Connor and Andy Moran with that brilliant delivery coming in. But this is the point of this, and it's ridiculous to suggest a sweeper for Kerry. Kerry full forward line is better than the Mayo full forward line. So if Kerry play a sweeper, they give Mayo a sweeper. What, Kerry will never back them. Kerry will back themselves for their three to outscore the other three any day of the week. Yeah. The last thing Kerry want to do is use a sweeper and give Mayo a sweeper. That does not benefit their better full forward line. The problem with Kerry was they had no half forward line. They didn't get the best out of their full forward line. But the idea that a sweeper that Kerry will not play a sweeper next day. Absolutely not. They back their team to beat. If they say, if you're to say Mayo or Kerry before the game, this is going to be a shootout. Kerry go, ah, lovely. That's yeah. that's the reality of it. Like, I mean, so Kerry are not going to take off one of their forwards, because none of their forwards are made to be a sweeper. They could, none of them can really sweep. Look at their half forward
line. I think the one thing that I think the difference between the teams in terms of their attack and play was that I think that there was nobody who really played that link role effectively for Kerry. I know Jack Savage got on a lot of ball, but he never, I can't remember him kicking much ball no. in. No, he's.
Can you remember anyone on the half forward line for Kerry getting on the ball and throwing in a day?
I don't think they have anyone that has that ability.
No.
I genuinely don't think they have anyone that has that sort of. That has that as their style of play.
But they weren't even there. The option—they never had the ball in that area to say. Because the whole way through the game, you're watching Aidan O'Shea and Donaghy, and you're saying, "I'd love to see what it would be like for Donaghy to get a good delivery." Yeah. And there was no one ever in the position to get to give that delivery.
I think what you're looking at there is really you had the majority of the time Donaghy was being kind of elusive and moving to try and get an easy ball with Aidan O'Shea. But a lot of the time, again, I know he had a big impact, but wasn't. If you're looking at the shape of your play up front, he was drifting all over the place. Gini was kind of staying inside. James O'Donoghue always kind of makes, he's always out in front, but he never passes the ball. He never kicks the ball in. Every time he gets it, it's head down, Merchant, go for his own score. And I think Kerry at times would be better served if he was looking to link up with that full forward line a little bit better, because he has the ability to play that link role really well and be a scoring threat. I think at times maybe he should be just mixing up his play a little bit. I think at times,
yeah, no, I'd agree.
I'd be wary of saying he's a little bit one dimensional, but he's predictable. He's so good that no matter how predictable he is, he's still very hard to stop.
It's because he's so good at taking someone on, yeah. He feels he takes someone on. And like, there's a difference between getting the ball in the full forward line, throwing one way, and then going at the goal.
Yeah, when you're within shooting distance. Yeah.
But when he's getting the ball outside the 45, like, you have to make, and I played that role as the first man out. You have to mix that up, as in turn, give one in, turn, take him on. You know, you have to mix that up. But James O'Donoghue, when he gets it out there, he's not a good playmaker. He's turning and going at his man, and he's to carry the ball too far before he gets in shooting distance, and like the chances of him making a mistake solo on it or someone getting a hand in is too high,
particularly in those conditions.
So he needs to mix that up if he's going to be the first one breaking. They've no half forward line. He has to mix it up.
I know Kerry will back their forwards, but would Mayo back their backs more than Kerry would back their own backs? So then maybe there's an imbalance there where Mayo will think our defenders are better set to hold Kerry forwards than their defenders already hold ours.
I think quite possibly. Yeah. After yesterday, I think
Mayo have better man marking cornerbacks. I think there's no doubt about it. Sure, Enright was taken to the cleaners by Andy Moran. Like, that was an absolute massacre. Yeah. A massacre of the highest order. Andy Moran got 1 point in the second half where it was a long diagonal ball to Killian O'Connor, and Andy just predicted it was going to break in front, and it wasn't followed. Enright stayed inside, and it's just knocked down to him. And Andy Moran, where this lad has got the ability to turn and shoot on the turn, like, for a fella who played a lot of wing back, like, he's up there with Graham Garrity for fellas who can transition to that full forward line. And I tried to do it. I couldn't kick those points on the turn. I always thought you had to play there all your life.
He's really agile and great on the turn. But just the other thing in terms of the benches and players coming on, like, Durkin had an impact for Mayo. They didn't really get much else off their bench in terms of an impact. Barry John Keane, to me, it's surprising to me that he can never seem to get into the team, because
he doesn't do it from the start. There's a bit of a McManaman about him.
Every time he plays, he's absolutely lethal. Yeah. And possibly he might free up O'Donoghue to come out to the half forward line or something. But I know James O'Donoghue played there maybe against Clare, but I just Kerry needs something more. They need more from their half back line. Like, I suppose it's the one time where you'd really, really see the benefit of Donica Walsh, because he's the man that does it.
Yeah, Donica Walsh was a huge loss, and I don't think he's going to be there for next week, because the talk is he did a hamstring, was it, Conan? Yeah. And like, I mean, no matter what hamstring, you're looking at 10 days. So, like, I mean, if it was a small strain, you're looking at 10 days where you'd be on the borderline, and that's the best case scenario of a small strain.
And there's no way he's getting 70 minutes out of it.
No,
but he does a bit of running as well.
He holds, like, the great thing about you saw it in the Munster final, and the difference between the Munster final was the Kerry half forward line all held their positions. Donica Walsh pops up on the half forward line in space all the time, so he'll work, and but to call him just a worker is ridiculous. He's always there as an option, the half forward line. I know he can mark James McCarthy and give him all sorts of trouble. Doesn't matter who Donica Walsh marks.
Yeah, he's good enough
and he gives anyone he marks trouble, and he was a massive loss yesterday. There's no doubt about that, because I'm telling you, the Kerry full forward line were easily marked because they had to make straight runs out races, and they're like Paul Gainey's not going to win those races. Donaghy was, well, he's a different story. He wasn't being marked tightly, and James O'Donoghue was being really tightly marked and might have won one or two races but took too much out of the ball, so he wasn't making those sideways runs that's going to free him up with a chance of a shot after it. He had too much to do. So I think if Fitzmaurice is going to change anything the next day, I don't know what happened Kevin McCarthy, like he needs a half forward line.
Strange that he just hasn't really seemed to have.
He must have got injured. He must be injured as well. Like, yeah. I mean, because he didn't even come on either, you know. So, like, they need to fix the half forward line. They need to fix the half forward line. And if they fix the half forward line, their full forward line can have the shootout, you know, with
Yeah, and
Mayo
I think Jack Barry probably needs to start for Kerry the next day as well.
Yeah.
He poses different problems for Mayo than what Maher does. Maher's a very good footballer, but Jack Barry just adds that bit of pace and power, and I suppose forward running power that can create the overlap, which again makes life easier for your inside forwards too.
Yeah, and Mayo ended up having to bring on Cohen to man mark him then after a while, because, like, I mean, he was getting the better of Seamus Shea. Like, you don't want to be marking Jack Barry when you're tired in a second half.
He's running
and he's got, like, he's almost like he doesn't care if there's someone in his way, he'll go around you, like he backs himself to take you on, like, yeah. Even Dave Moran. I'll briefly talk about David Moran in the performance of the weekend, but it's interesting, lads. It's hard to know. You'd imagine Kerry have much more room for improvement than Mayo, but if Mayo tinkered Aidan O'Shea and the Lee Keegan thing, they clearly have much more room for improvement. Quickly we'll touch on this Colin Boyle thing, because yesterday, right, and I talked to Rochford about this and he explained it, and he's attritional, and, you know, they had to get Durkin on the field, right?
Yeah,
so that's number one.
Yeah, I think he was talking a lot about Boyle, but the real thing was we had to get Durkin on, and we had to take someone off to bring him
there
on.
There you go. Yeah. So who do you take off, right? Aidan O'Shea is marking Donaghy. Two cornerbacks are doing brilliantly well.
Yeah.
Vaughan is having an outstanding game. So, like, I mean, who have you got left there that you're going to be bringing off?
O'Shea. Like, put O'Shea out of
defense. Well, yeah, but they obviously had their mind made up on him, yeah. Conan. You know, like, I mean, that wasn't even...
Well, it was either going to be Andy Moore or Colin Boyle.
Keith Higgins was there, you know, going really well too. So Colin Boyle, it's like he put in a shift and then he come off. And Rochford admits, Colin Boyle, yeah, he was playing well. Now, I criticised him for taking Boyle off before, but I think he brought on Cohen or Vaughan for him. See, I wouldn't, if Boyle's playing well, but he had to get Durkin on the field. I'm less critical of him taking Boyle off yesterday because of Durkin than it would be, say, if Cohen had come on for him. That wouldn't have made much sense to me.
Yeah, like, I suppose they'd... When you look at it, I think Seamus O'Shea, by the time he came off, they needed fresh legs in the middle of the field. Parsons was having a very good game around the middle, and you couldn't be taking him off. So when you run through the possibilities, I mean, Jason Doherty was taken off a little bit. Look, they could have done something differently, but I think they probably missed Boyle as well in that stage. But sometimes he can be a little bit rash at times in terms of his tact, and he can give away some frees. So look at it, it's a call. They had to get Durkin on because Durkin is well able to kick points, and it proved it was a brilliant call because he got the equaliser. But
that was a brilliant call, and again, donkeys don't, like, of course you won't call him a donkey for bringing imagine getting criticised for bringing on the fella that gets you bringing on the wing back that gets you the equalising point.
Oh, I should have been on earlier.
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy when you think of it, the narrative that's out there around Mayo and their management team.
Colin Boyle scored a goal though.
He did.
Took him off or not?
He did score a
goal.
No,
I agree with that. Well, I wouldn't have had O'Shea in there, but if that's what their minds are made up, then yeah, it probably was the only thing to do, maybe.
Yeah, look at
Higgins, maybe.
Again, at the time, yeah, look, Durkin does add something. He adds an attacking prowess, and he adds an ability to kick points, and they were possibly at that stage of the game were getting a little bit stifled up front. The scores weren't coming as rapidly from their full forward line. Look, Lee Keegan. Look, I mean, they could have possibly put Lee Keegan into midfield, and made that change rather than bringing Cohen in. But Cohen came in and spoiled Jack Barry quite effectively. So
yeah, and you see, you're at that stage as well where
fresh legs just make a huge difference.
It's
in
scary
any game,
soap as well, you know. When Durkin's coming on, like, and things are in a melting pot, it's like, oh shit, they still have this boy to come.
Yeah. And he's brilliantly accurate. And the thing about putting Keegan in the midfield, then it wouldn't have done much good because Murphy was just on him then. Do you know what I mean? You could move Keegan anywhere, and Murphy was doing so well on him that he's just kind of on him, and no matter what you do about it. Right, lads, that's all we have time for. We'll be back with AIB's performance of the weekend.
When your legs don't work like they used to before,
I was actually coming home on Saturday morning, and I had the podcast on from Newbridge all night, and that helps the journey, to be honest. If I've ran out of Ed Sheeran songs, depends on mood I'm in. Ed's good for if you're in a sappy mood, Ed's good to sing along to, and then if you're in a GA head mood, which I am probably most of the week, then I turn these boys on. Darling, I will be loving you
till we're 70. AIB, backing club and county.
AIB's performance of the weekend, lads, and Jesus Christ, we're going to have a bit of a chat about a few nominations, but let's just there's no suspense in this section. Andy Moran has won performance of the weekend, right? Because we have a poor
The winner is
let's not try and pretend that this is kind of a 50-50 thing between anyone. So we did a poll on the website on Sports Joe, and AIB have tweeted out the results. Andy Moran got 78%, Brendan Harrison got 6%, Paul Murphy got 8%, and David Moran, he got 8%. So they were the nominations at this stage. Yeah, Kieran Donaghy and Jason Doherty were thrown in there. They could be thrown in there as well. So we'll discuss them. We'll discuss all six of them there. So
we'll discuss each of them on their own merits now.
Each of them on their own merits, and like, we won't mention any of the texts or calls that we've been getting in about any of these, because like, that's irrelevant to our analysis. Right, we'll start with Brendan Harrison. Here's the first one in front of me, lads, and I have a confession to make about Brendan Harrison. It's not a confession because I think it's on Twitter. When I saw Brendan Harrison first, I didn't rate him. I didn't think he was any good. This has happened to me before. It doesn't often happen to me. I always think my first impressions of a player are always good. Kevin McLaughlin is another one I judged after one game and says, that lad's no good. Completely wrong on both of them, and I want to hold my hands in the air and say, look, I got this wrong. Don't always, the instinct on seeing a player for the first time. Purely, I thought Brendan Harrison was a bit
too... They've improved a lot since under 16, to be fair to you.
Brendan Harrison, I thought he was a bit too kamikaze. I thought he blind-headed, went for the ball too much, and I thought that a cleverer player would catch him out. And then you think back, I marked John Keane, who's a double all-star for Westmeath, and he's an outstanding cornerback, and he blind-headed went for every ball. There was no holding back with John Keane, and I always thought, Jesus, just let me get one ball that you're not going to punch it away like your life depended on it. Like, I mean, nothing did I ever get easy off, and I was like, would you relax for one ball? But if I had, because he's so committed, if you just got it in front of him that split second, he's literally gone. He's gone flying it. He went for every ball like his life depended on it, and I think Harrison is like that, and I think it's a kamikaze way of playing. But if you're as fast and tenacious and bloody good as these fellas, you can blindly go for these balls and actually trust yourself to get out in front, or trust yourself to get a body check that he's not turning yet. Like, he's just a really, really good player.
Yeah, and look at it. No, same as most cornerbacks as well, whether they're good or bad. A lot of it depends on the pressure going on the ball out the field as well. And in fairness to Mayo, they have consistently had a philosophy of putting huge pressure in the middle third, which when you're playing like that, you can't have your cornerbacks standing off and allowing the corner forward win it in front, because it just puts the efforts of all your players out the field putting pressure on the ball just to nil. So therefore, you know, his style of play suits perfectly with the way Mayo play as well. This aggressively contesting every ball that comes in and getting a fist away, or being as close as he can putting the man under pressure. You might often see with other defenders, like they're maybe playing a more zonal type of defence, they have strength in numbers, they'll allow a fella get a ball if he's not in the danger zone.
Yeah,
and you know, that's Aidan O'Shea is a perfect example. Now, unfortunately, the rest of his defence didn't work as well as he did, but you'd often see that where defenders kind of stand off, let the man get the ball out in the corner, and just stand him up and make him recycle. He doesn't play like that.
No,
I do agree with you. Sometimes those defenders, when you do see them, you're like, Jesus Christ, if the man on the ball here just plays a bit of a reverse pass, there's a goal on every time. But at that level, pressure on the ball and not having much territory up the field for the opposition means that he's able to play the game like that. And in fairness to him, he was really, really good at the weekend.
Yeah, look, I think that's fair enough. Andy Moran, Conan, you're usually right pieces about the likes of Andy Moran, but Aidan O'Shea kind of caught your eye instead. But Andy Moran usually will be an ode to Andy Moran and the genius that is the old man. And
it's funny you say that, because I was actually in the middle of updating an article from last year until I got called over, and it was, the title of that is from last year, there's no substitute for Andy Moran. I mean, not even Conor Loftus is a sub for him anymore. Like, he just can't replace him at the minute. No. The way he's playing. Like, last year, remember, he was on the team they start off with, and yeah. he just works his way back in. This year, he's getting hauled off after 55 minutes, but he's insatiable. Like, he can't be satisfied. Like, he goes after every single ball. You're right, when he turns, he just thinks he can score all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes when he doesn't even turn, he thinks he can score.
It's unreal, his accuracy now. Like, you don't think he's going to miss when he's turning. Like, you actually do not think he's going to miss. And you know what, yesterday, the change, and this is again, Stephen Rutchard changed this tactically. Andy Moran's always the first man out. Andy Moran played closer to goal, and Doherty was the first man out. So he changed that yesterday and got 1-5 out of Andy Moran. But again, here we go, the donkey, you know, donkeys over lions. When Andy Moran's role,
they got the link there.
Yeah,
Andy is usually the first receiver, we call him. Whereas now, you know, with Doherty playing that role.
But that was a change to what they had been doing. Again, now I know Doherty has been playing that role a bit more since he came back in. Doherty wasn't on the team in around the Galway game and the Clare and the Derry games.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, to have Andy Moran winning those diagonal balls, him and Killian close to goals, that's brilliant management. Leave your half forward in there. And again, that'll all be brushed because the Aidan O'Shea, the focus will be on Aidan O'Shea.
And especially when the fullback line is as weak as the Kerry ones, was put them under serious pressure. They were narrow, they were in deep, and the Kerry lads were scrambling all over the place. And it was great to see Andy Moran, who we all know is a good player, but it was good to see him just to say, I'm a level above this guy, like, and I'm going to show that.
Yeah, no, he was
and I think I'd be very surprised if they get the same freedom the next day in there, because Andy Moran was superb. He's brilliant on the turn. It was actually a pleasure to actually see him getting the ball in close enough to goal to do damage. And it's that's what personally I'd like to see more, is more of that type of attacking play. But again, it's dictated by how the opposition set up. Kerry didn't set up with any depth in their defence. They left guys one on one, and Andy Moran made them pay.
Yeah, and just actually give a mention for his goal. That goal wasn't as easy as he made it look.
No,
like,
it was a brilliant finish.
What a finish. If he blasted that high and it was saved, that was outside the 14, and he's getting that in the turn, he's hitting it first time, he could have kept going with it. It was a brilliant finish that I think it could be underestimated how difficult what he did from that position was.
Yeah, it was very decisive
yeah, is right,
really decisive, and a confident finish. And that's the sort of thing that does set a tone for a team early in a game. Like, your forward just gets it. He doesn't, like that, he didn't take a play, he just took a step, bang. And that is just what you want to see from your inside man. And it is, he gets so little opportunity to do that, because most of the time we see him playing against a mass defence and he's having to get the ball out of the bloody corner flag and kick it back out to the 45.
Well, he enjoyed that yesterday.
So I'd say, yeah, and it... Look, it's just great to see a fella like him, who's such, I suppose, dedicated and such a great servant to his county, to get the rewards on the big day. It's nice to see.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Like, David Moran, like, he battled away well. This David Moran was thrown in, wasn't one of his best games at all. But the reason I threw David Moran in here, Les, I want to talk to you about this. I was talking to Kieran Murphy from the Second Captains at the last game, and I forgot to talk about this on the podcast, is the disrespect David Moran shows the fella that's tackling him. David Moran doesn't even look at the fella that's tackling him. I saw yesterday David Moran was being tackled, and he was continuing on shouting at Maurice Deegan that he's being fouled while he's being tackled. Like, and usually when he's being tackled, he doesn't even look, he's just still looking in the full forward line, and there's some fella slapping at him, he's not even entertained. It's like there's no one even there. He's no problem going into contact. You tell players not to go into contact with the ball. He can be getting tackled by two lads and he's not entertaining them. He's brushed them past two of them, and he's always, ever watch his, the one bit of analysis I always hate is, you know, that kind of delight that the shine out of people's eyes. Well, you could do that with David Moran for the whole game, have this eye shine cam, and it'll never point down to the ground. He's constantly always looking to see what's going on inside there, and it doesn't matter what pressure he's under. It's funny to watch.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, look, he's obviously a very powerful man, but he's a brilliant footballer. Like, he's a great brain, and he's always looking to do the positive thing with the ball. There's so many players now, I suppose, and even around him and his own team, that are, they've the sort of the hand pass disease, but he very much, every time he gets the ball, no matter where it is, even in the half back line, he's looking to see what's the best pass I can give. Can I hit the half forward line now, or do I have to go past this little flea in my way before I can kick it to the half
this
forward?
This bloody nuisance that's just slapping at me here, and he's clearly not getting the ball. Just stop trying here.
Yeah, no, it is. It's interesting to see. Yeah. It's actually great to see, and it's a good point because there's a certain entertainment in the fella. Like, you can just imagine what his mentality is in training. What he's like. He's just walking by lads, just saying, "Here, listen, don't even bother trying to talk to me because you're not getting the ball."
Yeah. So if any of you listening to the podcast here hasn't noticed that, watch David Moran. The disrespect he shows the man that's tackling him. That's all. We'll leave it at that. Jason Doherty, lads, huge credit to Jason Doherty for a brilliant performance because, like, I mean, he was lively. He was that first man out. That's a selfless job. His first man out kind of running made space for the two lads inside. He got on a load of ball himself. It was just down to a tee. And like we said, McLaughlin and Dermot O'Connor being close, but like not getting sucked too far down the field, obviously helped these brilliant balls as well. So everything about that forward line worked.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, Doherty was very good. And Kevin McLaughlin, again, much like that. Look. Did played the role pretty much to perfection. You'd like to think he might be able to maybe get on the end of a move, but it's very, very difficult when you're playing a pitch that size. You're playing for you're the first receiver again. You're looking to get it and link it, and he did it really well. And he got a point.
Yeah, and yet, like the thing about that role, and again, I've played that role. That is a tough role to play. Like when you're tired, you have to make that run. You have to give the men out the field. They're under enough pressure that when they look up, they have to see an option, and you have to give it to them, or else, what are you doing there?
And the most difficult thing about it is it has to be the obvious pass.
Yeah.
So the fella that's marking you knows where you're going to run,
and he knows you're first out.
Yeah. So he's already a yard ahead of you. So it's a real lung buster to do that for 70 minutes.
Yeah.
And in fairness to Doherty, he was clever enough with his movement. I thought that he didn't. You know, he was elusive enough, and in fairness, the quality of pass into him as well was good. There was some lovely little angled crossfield passes into him, which is what you need, particularly one in the first half for Andy Moore. He laid one off to Andy Moore for a point where, you know, Griffin was expecting him to make the real obvious one down the wing, and he cut back in, and the Mayo man on the ball was able to spot him with a brilliant pass into the centre. And they're the real dangerous passes that are the difference between, I suppose, real quality players and the average inter-county players, the ability to be able to make the clever run and your teammate to see it.
To see it, yeah, exactly. And like, I mean, we didn't see any of those clever balls from Kerry, and they're the masters at those. Like we've pointed out on the podcast before, Kerry players always see those diagonal, sneaky little passes. Saw none of that from Kerry. All the good forward play was from Mayo. Paul Murphy, lads, I'm giving him a shout out because he did a Lee Keegan on Lee Keegan. That's pretty much the reason I call Paul Murphy. He marked him really tight. He got a yellow card. He was checking Lee Keegan's runs. He was pushing him. Like, I mean, you know, he had the fitness, he had the speed, and he had the marking ability to pretty much, I thought, take Lee Keegan pretty much out of the game. Like, we saw what Lee Keegan did against Roscommon on Enda Smith. Enda Smith was more interested in, you know, the kind of traditional midfielder role where you don't mark each other, whereas Lee Keegan took him for 1-3 in another brilliant tactical move by Rochford. But I think Paul Murphy was the man for him, and Fitzmaurice gets a lot of credit for making that switch so soon. And, you know, Lee Keegan didn't have the influence on the game that you'd imagine that he would.
It's tough for him in the forward line as well, though. Like, it probably helped Murphy a bit.
Yeah, Keegan Murphy was in his comfort zone, and Lee Keegan wasn't in his comfort zone.
And he was very good. Like, and it's going to be interesting to see if he does win performance of the week or not. We don't know.
Yeah. Well, here we go. Can I get a drum roll here, please?
Hang on. Keane's written down something.
Oh, well, I think Donaghy.
Oh, Donaghy. Sorry, Kieran Donaghy.
Considering we dedicated half the show to saying how well he played, we might as well give him a bit of credit. I think his performance is slightly. You know, we're not giving it the same credence just because he was marking a fish out of water in Aidan O'Shea. But look, he was crucial for Kerry. Only for him, they wouldn't be looking at a replay.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's any doubt. He missed two probably chances. One was a difficult chance. I think Murphy's point might have come off it. It was a bad miscrew, but he missed two. Was it two other ones he pulled to the left?
He pulled one short that was easy enough for a player of his caliber.
But his point in the first half was outstanding. Yeah. It was a brilliant, brilliant score. And listen, he's out in front all the time and he was winning ball. And like, I mean, I don't know, like to the level of how this man spooks teams.
Yeah.
Like I don't know any player ever in the history since I've been watching football that puts the shits up teams like Kieran Donaghy. Can you think of one?
In a different way, I suppose.
You'll still put your corner back on Canavan. You won't have to bring your bloody midfielder back in.
Like,
you know,
the thing about it is, like, I suppose the two players that teams have seemed to have completely changed the way they play is. The talk is always about Cluxton's kickouts for Dublin, and it's always about Donaghy against Kerry.
Yeah.
And other than that, people make positional switches on their team, but they don't completely change their whole format of their play based on individuals, and this is what you've had on a few occasions. And Donaghy's the one who consistently it happens, and it happens with Cluxton.
Yeah, that is true. They dominate the analysis that if you can stop them, you'll stop their team. And this is not Laois with Donaghy Kingston. These are the two best teams in the country, and these players are dominating the whole talk around them, you know.
Interesting you make that comparison. It's not Laois, because it's not like, you know, Donaghy's doing this with James O'Donoghy and Paul Geaney on the other side of them. Like, so people are actually worrying less about those two.
About two. That's magic foreign. Yeah, it is. It's unbelievable. And look, we'll be back on Thursday again talking about him to see what he can do. There's no way you can ignore him. Right, listen, we get the drum roll here, lads, because at 78% it's Andy Moran. No surprises. 1-5. He must be 47 years of age at this stage, you know. He's still going. The fact he wasn't on the team at the start of last year is just beyond belief. Used to be a wing back, now is a magic corner full forward who can kick scores on the turn. I can't stress how difficult it is without having an underage kind of pedigree behind you. Well, maybe he played underage for his club, I'm not too sure about that, but the ability to turn on to shoot on the turn, like, I mean, Keane, you can do it, but you're a natural forward. I found the transition to full forward, and that skill in particular, knowing your bearings on the turn, I always found difficult.
I think Andy's biggest thing is that he's able to get his shots away so fast.
Yeah,
like that's the thing that probably sets him apart from a lot of guys, is that with limited backlift he's able to get. Now, we know he's not kicking from big distance a lot of the time, but he's just so quick to get the shot away, and he's so sharp on the turn that it's an incredible skill he has off both feet .
Off both feet too, yeah, which is really improved. Right, Sandy Moran, you'll be getting an AIB and GAR mug in the post, because I'm sure they're all getting sorted at the moment. Right, we'll talk to you on Thursday, where we'll preview the replay and Dublin and Tyrone. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.